Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
So welcome to this CSR pod in collaboration with the Sustainable Business Day 2015. And we say a special welcome to Tim Guy Brooks, who is the Senior Director of Environment at LEGO. Welcome.
Thank you.
So you're now living in Denmark, I presume, since you're working at LEGO.
That's right. Yes, I live in Billund, in rural Denmark.
Yes, but you don't come from Denmark.
No, I come from a small town in northern England, so some way away. But actually, I'm half Canadian as well, so I'm a mix of lots of things.
And you made a lot of LEGO toys during your childhood, I guess.
I did. I'm pleased to say I'm a good advert for the company. I was obsessed with LEGO when I was somewhere between about the age of 5 to 12, I think, is the oldest I would probably admit to playing with LEGO.
You don't do fallbacks now and kind of play in the office.
Have to play in the office. It's everyone has. You don't have to, of course, but we all take home boxes from the shelves. Some of the new products that are released, then we take them home and try them out, and then we feedback on how they were to build and how much fun they were, and then we bring and display them on our offices. So our offices look like a big toy shop.
Would it be a family kind of event for you? Do you have children?
I do have a very young son, so he's just about the stage of building towers and knocking them over, so he's not building complex buildings. But for lots of people, yeah, for sure, it's a family event, and the kids, they love it.
Sounds like lots of fun.
In your speech, you actually said that you just recently gave your youngest son a box of LEGO bricks that belonged to you and that you got from your father and so on.
That's right, yeah.
So it's the family LEGO.
Yeah, it's a small box. They were, not widely available when my dad was young, so he only has a few of them. But yeah, they're able to mix in with all of the new LEGO bricks that my son has. So I try and separate them as best I can. They're the historic artifacts of our family, yeah.
That's neat. You have a bachelor degree in environmental geoscience, so you have a kind of early interest in environmental issues. Is that... Where did it come from? Where did it all begin in your case?
Well, yeah, my village in northern England is up on the moors, so a bit like, not quite as expansive as the Hardanger Plateau, but a bit like that. And they wanted to, there was a local company who wanted to build a wind farm above our village, and I was maybe about 12 or 13, and I just thought that sounded really cool. I thought it sounded a really great idea that you could make energy from the wind. And we were just learning about the environment. It was very much at that time around local environment, so plastic waste, plastic bags in the rubbish and on the land, toxic pollution in water. So not really about climate change so much. But I thought that sounded like a great idea, and I researched it a bit, and I went on, they organized a trip to see another wind farm, and I was the only person on the bus in the entire village. So I thought, maybe I'm onto something here. And that spurred me on, and then for university, I went on to do pretty much the only environmental subject that was available at the time, which was a geoscience degree. And then I converted into a master's degree in environmental technology, which was focused on energy. So yeah, I've always been interested in it. And it's been a really interesting journey so far.
Mm-hmm. So energy is some kind of a major theme in your work life, so to say.
Yeah, I think that's the core part for me is around energy technologies. And I think it's just magical how you can create energy that we can do so much with electricity. We can run laptops, we can drive buses, we can even fly planes nowadays with electricity. I mean, we can make all that electricity just from the natural world around us. You know, that the statistics that, you know, there's enough sunlight that falls on the earth in a day to power it for, I think it's a year. I mean, that's just amazing.
So is energy the core what you are responsible for in LIGO also?
No, so I look after our entire environmental sustainability footprint. So if we divide it into the environment, the social and the governance. So if you think the social being the way we treat people and the way we look after our own people and our suppliers, and governance is how we act as a company. The environmental part of that ESG, the environmental part is all of the things that do that interact with the natural environment. And I look after the entire, what we call value chain. So all the way from our suppliers, the people who supply our raw materials, to our own factories, because we own and operate our own factories, all the way downstream to our customers. So the retailers that sell our products and then into the consumers as well.
You had just recently, you were on stage on the Sustainable Business Day, and you had a speak about integrating sustainability into your business plan. And you started out by being nicely humble by saying we're on the way. So if you would kind of give us just a short statement, what are you doing about integrating sustainability into your business? You don't have to do the long speak.
But yeah. So I think when I say we're on the way, it's a long journey. Arguably, we've been doing it since 1932 when we were first formed, because being a good company and a good socially and responsible company is something that's very deep in our company values, and it's a very values-driven company. So, I do try and be modest and say we're on the way. I think we do a very, very good job given our values base from that early start. But when I put up the brand framework, which is really the thing that guides us as a company, and those are some promises that we make to our people and partners, and certainly it's a promise that we make to the planet around the ESG agenda. So by really anchoring it into our strategy and our strategy document, that's one way. I think by making it really real to people and providing concrete examples of the work we do. So if that's building a wind farm or creating better packaging solutions, that really helps embed it, because it helps those in the business to see that there's a good business case. It makes a difference that when we apply that green lens on problems, we can actually create better solutions. So that's another way. And I think both showing the carrot and the stick, if you like, is another way which we work quite a lot within the business. So to show the opportunities of sustainability and embedding sustainability in the business, and also showing the risks and being very clinical and detailed about what, if we don't do it, if we don't make the difference, if we don't make the changes, what are the impacts for our business? And some of those can be quite severe when you really look at them in the long term. So we try and take a measured approach and both throw people a bit of carrot and give people a bit of stick sometimes as well.
If we dive into that stick and carrot, would you be able to kind of, from your desk right now or a couple of weeks ago, kind of given us an example of a carrot and stick discussion that you had recently inside?
Yeah, I mean, I think I think a carrot and stick would maybe be one that we're doing at the moment with our suppliers and our supply chain. So we're running a pilot program we call Engage to Reduce. And what we want to do is engage with our supply chain to make environmental improvements and reductions, because we know that 75% of our carbon dioxide emissions sit in our supply chain. And there's two ways we can do that. We can either tell our suppliers, if you don't make a change, we're not going to deal with you anymore. You're no longer going to be our supplier, or we want a discount if you're not going to make a change on your price, etc. That's the stick. Or we can go out to them and say, why don't we work together? If we work together in a collaborative and an open sort of innovation approach, we can create win-wins between us. So something that's good for you as a business, so the company that supplies us with the cardboard for the packaging, if it's good for you as a company and it's good for us and it's good for the environment, shouldn't we be looking at these options rather than just turning up and saying, if you don't change your ways, we'll not deal with you anymore? And that's one way where we're trying to use more of a carrot than a stick, and we really think that's the best way to make change.
You told the tale of locking your suppliers into a room, and really literally locking them into a room.
Yeah.
Is that one of the things that you're doing within this process of engaging to reduce?
Exactly. And what what we did there was to get 30 supplier representatives, and we took them to a hotel. We didn't really lock them in. They could have left, but...
they didn't want to.
They didn't want to, and it was three long, very long days. And what we said is you've got 3 days to come up with some ideas. And the ideas must save a minimum of 1,000 tons of carbon. They must have a positive business case, and they must be able to be implemented within the next 5 years within the business. And then we said, apart from that, off you go. You know, go away and work out. You've got guys from Lego here. You've got our buying managers from Lego. You guys are the suppliers. We've got technical experts. We provided an organization called the Carbon Trust who would do the calculations, etc., for them. He said, you know, be as crazy as you like. And that was really what we were trying to do there, is to say, in the past where we may have just had buyer-supplier discussions, so I want to buy this from you, you want to sell it to me, let's do a deal. Let's take that out of the equation and let's see what we can do if we just open the field. And we found some really interesting things in those discussions that we're going to now try and start to implement as a pilot to prove that the concept works. And if we can do that, then we would like to do more of those kind of workshops with our suppliers.
And these suppliers, the 30 of them, they were actually competitors as well.
Some of them were, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. They were and how did that work out, to put actual competitors in the room saying, you're going to share ideas about how to sell to us?
But yeah.
Eventually, we might buy from one of you.
And I think we're just learning the way. And I think there was such a great, I will say, there was such a great spirit over those 3 days. I think the competitors, we put some of them in the same teams. We put some of them in different teams. I think they all look at it in a slightly different way, which was nice. And I think, particularly around sustainability, we're able to sometimes step outside of the general competitive world and really try and focus on the issue and the problem at hand. But of course, sometimes there are angles where companies think they have more to offer than others, and they may want to have a discussion with us privately, and that's okay as well, as long as we end up together having the best solution.
Was it hard to get them? I'm like, 3 days in a business world is a long time. It's a long period of time. You would usually get half an hour, or, talk fast, sustainability. But 3 days, was that,
Yeah, we were really...
How come you decided on 3 days?
We were really conscious of that, that it was a big ask. We were asking a lot of our suppliers. And I think we had to really try and make a program that they would get something out of as well. So we put in a lot of education into the program. We had our CFO open the program as well, because we wanted to show that, again, to that embedding perspective, that it was really embedded into the business and that we really meant it. And I think we tried to make it fun and engaging as well. And we had some, really amazing feedback in the nine out of 10, around how much people enjoyed the occasion. So by trying to make sure that people got something out of it, I think was the key part. But we'll see if we do another one. We'll see if people want to come back for 3 days or not.
So this was kind of a one-time trial, and then
this
see
is
what
a trial,
happens.
And we'll see what happens. Yeah, for sure. And then and we'll try and optimize it. And maybe 3 days is too long. Maybe it's two or one. But actually, I think most people felt it was about the right length of time. I don't think they would have wanted to do 4 days, but 3 days is about right.
So those are the stuff that you have done. But you were also saying we're on our way to implement or to integrate sustainability into our business strategy. If you would dream about meeting us next year, you would come back in a year from now. What would you say, a really successful year would have included in the next step of integrating sustainability? Where are you at right now and what do you want to do?
So I think our real challenge in the business is in terms of the overall sustainability world, the environment, the social and the governance, I think we really want to be more concrete about our role for children and the ability for us to make a difference to children. So when we talk about play and learning and creativity, and that's the one space that we think we as Lego should lead the world in, if you like. And we try and split the agenda into many parts. So we want to lead the world in play, creativity, learning. We want to lead the toy industry on the environmental space. So we say that's the bit where we can make a difference as leadership. And we want to be ahead of the game on compliance and governance. So I think this time next year, what I would really hope to be talking more about is our thinking around play, learning, creativity, and really sharing that with as many children in the world as possible, and our role as a company to do that. And that's really, I think, our core overall guiding mission, really, as a company.
I have a question on that, even if it's perhaps a bit off topic on your area. But if you look on the gender side of the toy manufacturing, I mean, when my children were smaller than they are now, mm-hmm. I don't think they play with Lego anymore, but okay. 15 years ago they did. And, you know, our daughter, she obviously wanted the pink stable with the nice horses and the cute girls and the handsome guys driving the car. Mm-hmm. And my son obviously wanted the dark castle with heavily armed men protecting the princess from the pirates and so on. How do you look on that responsibility as a toy manufacturer?
You're right. It's outside my area. I think it's an area where we have, and you know that we have a number of different product lines that appeal to different children. I think it's something that we are very keen to keep a watchful eye on, how boys play, how girls play, how they play together. And you know, we are aware that that's an issue for lots of people around the world, and the stereotyping of toys, the genderization of toys, the types of play. I think we fundamentally, and I hope it's not too political an answer, but we want that creative play and that learning play to be available to as many children and as appealing to as many children as
yes,
possible.
Yes, but I think it's the difference between, because when I was a child, we bought Lego just in, you know, bricks. It wasn't a ready concept, but during, along the way, it's been manufactured like a very ready, almost like a puzzle. I mean, it's a ready picture, you know, so you have to build, you don't have to, but you always do. You build the castle that's on the picture of the box. So there is a responsibility with the concept, I think. Not just for you, but I mean for all
I think
toy
we hear
manufacturers.
That. Yeah, I think we hear that a lot. And a lot of people ask the question of why can't I buy just a bucket of bricks that I used to be able to? And we say you can. You know, it's actually one of our biggest lines that we have is it's a range called Lego Classic. And we sell about, I think it's about 15 different bucket types, just of bricks, you know, colored bricks, no instructions. I think there's some creative ideas that are thrown into those. But, you know, and those are, there's the Lego Classic range and Lego Creator, which is again, has a number of different models contained within one set. And those are very popular with parents and with grandparents, I think, to your point. I think the one thing we notice with kids, and it doesn't seem to have ever changed, and I grew up with instruction booklets, you know, generally that those were most of the models I built. And you build it once when you get it and you play with it, and then it goes into a big box of play.
Yeah.
And then you build whatever you want, you know. And I think we are asked a lot that our children just being pushed down this one line of making what's on the box. And of course they do make it, and that's why they that's why they're inspired. But what we see is that then reignites their passion in all of their other Lego bricks that they have already.
Which is true. But I'm looking for this green or brown line. You know, baby clothing, you would have this kind of the pinkish, and then you would have the blue or the black, which would be boys. But then there's these kind of brands that go in between and trying to do the blue okay. and the green line, which is, you know, you might decide yourself. But... So do the
now we are even more off topics.
Yeah, well, no, it was just a comment of the, you know, find the in-between line. That would be nice. Yeah. And by the way, your instruction books are so nice. They're the best in the business. It's a source of inspiration if you want to do an instruction book. I love them. That was beside the point completely, but it's really good. I'm going to go into your area again.
Okay.
Okay, safer into your area. Investments, or when working with environmental issues, lots of the motivation or the benefit can come out of savings. I mean, obviously, and that would drive any kind of sensible business to make, you know, good resource use. But you would also come to a certain point when you need a large investment to go into, to, you know, making the big changes. And you talked recently, or just on stage, about the large investment of wind energy. Would you kind of give us some of the background of how, because you were mentioning on stage saying it's a 400 million euro investment, it was a hard case to argue. How did you argue the case, and what actually you know, the story behind it would be?
I think the story behind it was and, you know, we first got power from the wind farm, as I said, last month. But of course, you can't just build a wind farm in a few weeks. So it's many, many years in the planning. But really what we were trying to do was to say how, if we have an aim of positive impact, you know, how do we in any way get towards positive impact? And we looked a lot at different ways we could deal with our energy consumption. And one of them was certificates, looking at whether we could buy offset certificates for renewable energy. One of them was whether we could buy green energy that was already on the grid. And one of them was, well, could we invest in our own renewable capacity? And what we took the decision to do was really to invest in our own capacity, I think, for a number of reasons, predominantly as a strategic long-term investment. So something that we can look forward to many years in the future. So it provides us with a very long-term view on the world. And I think what that enables us to do is to try and reduce some of our risk around energy prices in the future. And so we know that if we own some generation capacity, that it can really help us flatten any increase in energy prices. But yes, I think we really looked at it from a number of points of view, from our corporate reputation to say this is something that we should be doing as the LEGO Group. You know, we have in some way the capital to do it. We have lots of options for where we invest it. This isn't the most attractive business case in the world, and I think anyone who's involved in offshore wind would agree it's not a stellar business case, but it's a good long-term investment. And I think we took a number of those kind of aspects to say it's good for us as a risk in a business, it's good for our positive impact, it's good for our corporate reputation, it's not a bad business case, and then that's something that we should go ahead and do.
Was it driven by you?
It wasn't, and I must be honest about that. It was prior to my time in LEGO, and this is how, you know, I've been with LEGO nearly 3 years, 2.5 years. So it was something that was a couple of years before my time as well.
So 5-6 years back,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, and it's about that kind of time scale.
And was it driven from the sustainability kind of department, or was it some other, you know, who were actually kind of owning the case of driving
it? Was certainly
change.
Driven by the sustainability department, from my understanding, who really said they were looking at the different options that were available around certificates, renewable energy, etc. But of course it had the full backing of the CEO, and actually the investment's been made by our parent company Kirkby, who are the owners of the LEGO group, if you like, and really that was involving them as well, because they're the people who invest money on our behalf as the LEGO group.
So it was kind of a board decision as well. It was beyond...
It had to be a board decision for that kind of investment, yeah.
And you have a promise of 2020, you should have a 100% renewable energy. Mm-hmm. Does that cover your supply line as well, or is that your own?
So that's our own consumption, you know, within our own production. So it's all of our factories and offices and, all of our... warehousing space, etc. To get into our supply chain obviously is a huge task, and that's where we're starting down the line with things like the Engage to Reduce program that I talked about.
Are you making any promises about, because you were saying earlier that 70% of your kind of CO2 emission is down supply line, and are you making any promises of how you will drive your suppliers towards this? Because it's an ambitious 2020 100% renewable is an ambitious kind of goal. How are you kind of pushing that towards your supplier?
And that's what we find. That's why the sustainability world is so exciting, is because, you know, most companies a lot of companies are thinking about making those 100% renewable energy commitments. And we've made that. So then the next question is, right, OK, what are you going to do next? And that's why we're excited about it. And we haven't set any targets, hard targets with our suppliers, because we really want to run. At this point, we want to run this pilot project through and work out what the best options are, work out how we can collaborate with our suppliers. And again, it's back to this carrot and stick. Do we want to go out and set a target and beat our suppliers up, or do we want to try and find a mutually exciting target with our suppliers that where we can make a difference? And we'll continue to look at it, and, you know, we hope to set some goals or some future direction quite soon.
At H&M, you can buy a selective collection of ecological cotton and so on, and different labels of fair trade. But can you do that kind of choice in LEGO?
I think it's a very different kind of business model, and I think the apparel industry struggles with some very different issues to the one.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
That we struggle with. And that's, you know, to, I think to your earlier point, a lot of their, or I don't think H&M or H&M own any factories themselves. So, of course, they have different standards and different ways of dealing with their products. As I say, because we own the vast majority of the manufacturing chain, you know, we see it all as being the best, you know, as being highly ethical, as being superb quality. So we don't really offer a differentiated line.
But you haven't decided. I mean, you're not using any labels. Or, I mean, I'm a big consumer of Lego, so I'm out there shopping it. And knowing, being me and being having my background, I will be looking for this fair trade logo, or I will be looking for ecological something. Or, but you don't label any of the stuff. You don't. I mean, there isn't lots of information on the boxes, basically saying. So is that because you feel you got such a control? How would the consumer know that then?
So that is partly a conscious choice, and it's partly a space issue as well on the box. That, you know, there are lots of other things on the box, particularly when it comes to toy safety. You know, we have to be so hot on toy safety that a lot of the box is taken up with toy safety type labeling and logos. But one that we do have on there is the FSC logo. Mm. So that's one of our most recent commitments to be 100% FSC in our supply chain. So with regard to that's Forestry Stewardship Council. So that covers it means that our sustainable paper and board comes from sustainable sources, and so we have put that logo on the boxes. But what we want people to do really is to see the Lego logo and know that behind that logo sits a promise of ethical standards, of high quality, of safety, etc. And of course, we produce things like our responsibility report, which we're trying to make more readable, more clear, more easy to understand. It used to be quite a thick book, and we're trying to make it a bit thinner and a bit more a bit more transparent. And so, what we would encourage consumers to do, really, if they're at all wanting to find out more information and they think, I'm missing a logo on the box, is to go on the website, check out our responsibility report and read a bit more about what we're doing in those areas.
And do you think you're successful doing that as of today?
I think we're working on it. I would never say that we've got there. I think within the business on the responsibility report, we know that we need to find smarter and better ways of reaching consumers sustainability messaging. But I think we don't want to force it down people's throats. I think we want people to, if they have questions and they want to know more, we want to make that information easy and easy to get hold of and available for them to get hold of. I think the box, the Lego box, particularly some of our smaller ones, is such a tight platform to get messaging across.
But you get all those instruction books, and we parents, we read those instruction books. And if I would have found you know, the CSR sustainability page in the instruction book, I would have been joyful and you know, I'll buy an X one, knowing, because I honestly didn't know, and I should be somebody who is aware and conscious. But I had no clue of what you were doing until I started kind of searching it on your site. So I would be a passive receiver. But as a passive receiver, I've seen very little or nearly nothing.
And I think we need to do, you know, we need to look more into our consumers and find out what they want to know. And I do think we're on the beginning of a bit of a journey there, that in the past we have been very Nordic in our outlook and not wanted to say too much about the work that we've done. We have so many really great stories, but we want to be careful about how we tell people. We don't want people to feel that we're promoting ourselves too much and that we're putting our head above the parapet. So we are on a learning journey about what's the best way to talk to consumers about this kind of issue. And at the moment, our thinking is around that if they are interested, hopefully they will come to our website that we'll find out a bit more. But maybe we need to learn a bit more.
Okay, the reflection would be lots more, kind of, for the passive receivers. I had a curious question from one of these Lego bricks that I tend to step on at nighttime. Very painful. There's nothing safety about the stepping.
Apparently it's worse with socks on.
Yeah, is it?
Apparently so.
So you should be barefoot when you...
Barefoot, yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
well, yeah. I've learned something really valuable from this
I've
interview.
Seen in executive retreats, they do a Lego fire pit where you have to walk along there.
A Lego
fire pit, yeah.
We all kind of recognize that from at home, basically.
Great.
But from one brick, what is it actually made of? You were talking about kind of plastics beginning with, and you were talking about your granddad's kind of Lego being inherited by your son now. So what is the, if I would have an... as you had on food, if I would have, you know, what's inside declaration, what would be in the Lego?
So again, it's slightly outside my expertise in terms of, we have a very detailed materials team, but predominantly the Lego bricks are made of ABS plastic. So that's by far our biggest material that we use.
And plastics would be oil-based
raw materials. Yeah.
And is there any kind of option to oil-based raw material then? Going the fossil fuel track of, you know, alternative fuels here.
And this is the challenge that we're working on at the moment. And we've said by 2030, we want to have more sustainable options, or we want to be in more sustainable materials. We know that we need to make progress on materials. We know that that's what consumers are asking us. But it's incredibly, at the same time, it's incredibly difficult. You know, we have to provide the safest play experience we possibly can. It has to be high quality. The colors, when you build a wall of bricks, they have to match. All the colors have to be the same, you know, if it's reds or yellows or blues. They have to be super, super safe. As I said, they have to have the right sound almost when you mix a bucket of bricks together. They have to be shiny, they have to not scratch. They have, you know, they have to mold tolerances of 2 microns, which is really, really small, to enable them to fit together and then pop apart with a child to be able to pop them apart. So we have lots and lots of challenges on the material, and that makes it harder to find new materials because we don't want to trade off any one of those issues, particularly not safety and particularly not quality. Yeah. So it's a journey. We're working really hard. We have a new VP of materials who we hired last year. And she, her job, she comes from the materials industry, from the plastics industry. Her job is to expand her team and to work with universities and companies and research institutions to try and find some of these materials. And if they don't exist, to try and help, to get companies to help invent them.
Is it, because I'm kind of thinking, is there not a risk, and this comes back to the communication part, me being a parent, I would say, no, you shouldn't trade off security or safety. Mm-hmm. But is there not a risk, if I was informed, I would be happy to accept less shiny bricks, because you were telling me that due to blah, 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 oil consumption, we're happy, we're now, you know, but you, isn't there a risk that you're locking yourself into a kind of quality or, you know, a quality that isn't necessary if you get the consumers to join you in your task to transform?
I think that's a discussion we need to have with our consumers, you know, and it's a discussion we have all the time inside the business is what if?
Yeah.
And the number one non-negotiable is safety. You know, we will not trade
agreeable,
off on that.
Yes.
We
all agree on
that. Yeah.
But the shininess or the clickiness or, you know, those are stuff that I would say, yeah, what the heck, make any wood or whatever, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, I would be less concerned if you told me the story why you were doing it. If you just did it, I would maybe become unhappy about it. But if you told me why.
But if it doesn't fit anymore, then you would be unhappy
on the other side. Yeah, Yeah, maybe. I'm not sure. You know, go Liago and Shiman. You know, it's not fitting anymore. I'll just say that.
our kind of guiding principle is really that we don't want to have to make those compromises. That's okay. You know, we want to start from the highest possible bar, and that's where we're at the moment. That you know, we want to be able to achieve that goal without making any of those compromises that people, when they buy the product, they would be in any way disappointed. You know, we don't want that to happen.
But isn't it replacing one quality with another? So, the compromise would be saying we're doing less of this but more of this.
And again, you know, I don't sit in the quality team. So
I love talking Lego.
This is a totally
I'll go into some other. Okay, let's have then this is essential for me with my son Melker. He's 6 years old. And how much Lego should a kid really have? What's your best advice on this?
What's my best advice? I think, you know, my son has more Lego than I had, and I have more Lego than my dad has. But the beauty of it is that it all goes into a big pot, and we can, you know, we can create some really cool stuff. I think we know that kids in our established markets have, you know, the Lego that they want and the Lego that they, you know, that their parents want to buy them. I think the one thing that we want to do is to bring that Lego play experience into the hands of as many children globally as possible. And there's the kids who have a lot of Lego or not very much or what have you, at the moment are those in the more developed countries, Europe, the USA, you know, Japan, Korea, etc. But there's a lot of kids who don't, and that's where we see the company moving in the future.
Yeah.
As to how much you should buy your son, I have no advice for you.
There is no limitation. He thinks there should be no limitation.
Yeah.
He's even thinking about throwing a coin in a pond because he believes in a fountain, and then he's going to wish for all the Lego in the world. And I'm just okay, sure, go ahead and wish.
But and sometimes that's good for kids to have ambition,
guess. Yes, it's true. But isn't that kind of, aren't we boiling down to the elephant in the room when it comes to consumption? Mm-hmm. Because we're seeing, you know, consumption, every brand that is a consumer brand that needs to be sold to consumers, there has to be in the future some kind of limitation to consumption. And this is the core, this is the white elephant in the room for all businesses. And how would you address that issue? Because it is a key one in sustainability.
I think, and I'm not again trying to be political here, but I think you can, what children want are new experiences and things that excitement. And I don't think that has to go hand in hand with the consumption of raw materials always. I think that there are many things that we can and want, or that we certainly want to do in the future with Lego, and looking at you know, the longevity of the product, that is really, really important for us, that it lasts a long time. And that's one of the issues with consumption, is this disposable nature of society that we're in, that fast fashion or whatever, you know, that there are a lot of things that are made and disposed of. So there's something around the fact that you don't always need to consume things to have new experiences.
True.
I think what we want to do is obviously offer those new experiences to children, and it may not always be due to, you know, related to the consumption of raw materials, or it could be more sustainable materials, it could be looking at using recycled materials, whatever. You know, and I'm saying is they don't have to go hand in hand.
Agreed. There's in Sweden, there is an organization called Retoy who's driving the idea of having children borrow toys from each other. So they would have a session in a library, and then you would go and borrow a toy, and then you would return it eventually, like, you know, the book. And how would you feel about an initiative like that? Because that would obviously limit the consumption, and the child would still have the experience.
I think parents and children have to make the best choices for themselves, ultimately. You know, they have to decide how they want to get, whether it's the Lego play experience or any other experience, play, film, whatever. And, you know, that's really up to parents. What we do is provide a product. And, I know there's lots of places where you can borrow Lego, or you can rent it, or And what we do is we provide a product, we sell the product, and what we are very clear on our website is when you're finished with that product, please do not throw it away. You know, almost don't recycle it either, because, you know, that's devaluing the material. So give it to somebody else.
Give it to the next generation. Basically.
Next generation, give it to a friend, family, neighbor, give it to your local charity shop, give it to a library, you know. And I think that there is, when we talk about circular economy, there's a big kind of push around, well, it should be, you should take it back, you should recycle it. Well, what if it's perfectly usable? Why should, you know, by recycling it, it's actually using more energy and destroying the value in the product. So
but how about kind of business models where you would lend, you would give people them, what you would lend it? Lend it?
Yeah.
That's the Swedish word for it.
Yeah, you'd lend it, yeah.
You would lend it to people instead, and you would, it would still be within your kind of system, because that's often the challenge for an individual consumer is to find the platforms for exchange while you would could provide the platform. Would that be a business idea for...
I think I can only relate it to my own experience of Lego, is that I really valued, and maybe this is my own personality, I valued owning the Lego that I had. It was my Lego. I took ownership of it. I looked after it, and I'm able to give it to my son. And that for me is really, really important. That may not be the same for everybody, and I'm not, you know, I'm not of course saying it for some parents and children. It may work that they borrow it and give it back, and that's fine as well. But for me, I look now at my box of Lego and I have a really strong emotional attachment to it, you know.
So it's going to be in the future wheel of next generation. It's
definitely
going to be, these are my jewels and these are my Lego for
definitely
next generation to come.
If we go to sustainability on a more global level, do you think that energy is the core challenge for making a sustainability world?
I think, like a lot of people, I think that that's a tricky one. I think probably population growth and you know, the rise of the middle classes who want and have a right to the same standard of life as everyone else is the biggest challenge. But of course, underlying that are energy, materials, you know, raw materials, consumption, etc., to achieve that lifestyle. So I think I wouldn't say it's the biggest, but it's a component of lots of other issues that are wrapped up in that larger population and expectation for better living standards.
How about chemicals? Some say that that could be the fall of mankind, or even more than the climate effect.
I think that's personal views again. You know, that's my view is that it's really about how do we use technology and the ingenuity of mankind to solve some of these big problems. You know. And how do we adjust our systems to accept some technology which already exists? You know, a lot of the times there are technologies that are out there, they exist, they just need to be looked at in a different way to be adopted.
The sustainability world is full of success stories, and you can hear a lot of them here today, like we're doing this great stuff, you know, and applauds and so on. And we are on the CSR pod investigating that that there should be much more learning from to gain from telling your mistakes also. Would you be up for sharing a mistake or mistakes that you made in the process of developing Lego?
Why not?
These are one of the hardest questions.
I think, and this wasn't an experience with Lego actually, but I think in my previous role I worked for a big retailer, and one of the biggest mistakes that we made and it was really misunderstanding the customer and the consumer, and we built a lot of very cool renewable supermarkets. Wood frame buildings with glass and solar panels on the top and all the rest of it. And I was so excited by these buildings, my background being in energy and in buildings, I thought this is the coolest thing we've ever done. And what we found is the consumers were actually shopping in the really run-down, old-fashioned supermarket down the road because it felt cheaper. It felt like a better price proposition than the building that we'd built, the flashy green. And we totally got it wrong with consumers. We totally misunderstood what they wanted. And on the one hand, what they said, and on the other hand, what they did. And that's one of, I think, the biggest challenges we have in the consumer goods industry, is dealing with that dichotomy. And I'm as guilty, if you like, if that's guilty is the word, as anyone else is, that I say one thing often and I do another thing. And so I think that we have much, much to learn about consumer behavior. And we have much to learn about how we can encourage consumers into a different way of behaving by offering different products and services. So that was one mistake, I think, by going ahead and building supermarkets that we in the sustainability team thought were the right thing to do, but not necessarily what the consumer thought was the right thing.
Extremely good story. Thank you for sharing that. You're kind of flying around the world, we're guessing. We're guessing you have a global reach of your perspective, so we're going to try it out now.
Yeah, okay.
Good luck by saying. Where would you, if you're looking outside the box, say, where would you find the most engaged consumers? What market would be most demanding?
I think it depends on the subject. I think certainly in the Nordics, it's probably the most engaged consumers on a range of the topics that we've been talking about in this interview. I think it's hard to pin down exactly where. I think certainly Germany has some incredibly engaged consumers, and I think that there are different issues for different consumers globally. You know, that Asian consumers and are very interested in education and creativity and learning. You know, American consumers are very aware of safety and of quality and of the provenance where things are made. You know, and Nordic consumers are very aware of labor rights, and certainly is more of the social issues as well. So I think it's a very mixed picture, and again, I think it's often difficult to separate what consumers say is important to them and then their actual behavior of what they go ahead and do.
And where would you find the bravest politicians?
The bravest politicians, wow.
Where can I look out for brave politicians? So where should we look?
That is probably outside my area of expertise. I think
you may lie.
So they're not in Denmark.
I think anyone who is trying to break the mold a bit in the right way around sustainability and CSR and is pretty brave at the moment. I think a lot of certainly in the UK, a lot of the political landscape is becoming the same. People aren't as maverick perhaps as they were. So I think anyone in my world who really champions the cause of sustainability is pretty brave.
And where would we find the best NGOs in the area of sustainability?
Everywhere, I think. Everywhere and those that are and NGOs come in all different shapes and sizes, like companies, and some NGOs engage really closely with companies, and some are not keen to talk to companies. And, that's great. And it's great that we have a whole range of NGOs that keep us on our toes as well, and that keep us up to snuff.
Do you have a favorite one that you would
do? Do I have a favorite?
Do you have a favorite one?
I wouldn't say favorite. I mean, we've partnered with two NGOs, if you like, or whether you call the UN an NGO, but partnered with UNICEF when it comes to child rights and our approaches on children's play, learning, and safety and their rights. And we've partnered with WWF on our kind of environment strategy. Mm. So I don't think favorite, but those are our partners that we look to for guidance, if you like, and support, and critical friend, I think is the word we would use.
I got my last question. When you're looking for a source of inspiration, where would you turn?
I go out on my bike. I go on a long mountain bike ride or a road bike ride, and I try and I'm very much a fan of the nature and getting out, and or I go for a swim in the fjord or walk the dog or whatever, and I think that's one source of inspiration. And the other one is I'm very interested in space and astronauts who went to the moon in the 60s, and there's a great film, I think it's called Shadow of the Moon. At the end of that film, all of the astronauts talk about the planet, how unbelievably fragile it was and how they could put the planet behind their thumb, you know, when they were looking out their spacecraft. And I think some of the words at the end of that film from these guys who were, they were jock test pilots from Texas, you know, they were not environmentalists before they went out into space. They were these kind of crazy guys flying around eating T-bone steaks, and they came back from space totally different, seeing spiritual, environmental, seeing the world in a very different place. And I think that's also inspiring, that when you can get normal average guys who go out, not that an astronaut you would describe as an average guy, but who go in and they can see the world in a different way, that's pretty inspiring as well.
Thank you for sharing that with us.
Yes, and thank you very much for coming here and talking to us.
Thanks very much.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.